When autistic people speak to other autistic people, they are satisfied with their communication experiences because they have similar communication styles. When neurotypical people communicate with neurotypical people, they are satisfied with their experiences because they have similar communication styles. When autistic people speak to allistic or non-autistic people, even if they're neurodivergent, that's where there tends to be a problem because there's different communication styles.
Welcome to the SensoryWise Solutions podcast for parents, where parents can get real, actionable strategies to support kids with sensory processing disorder. I'm Laura, OT and mom to Liliana, a sensory sensitive kid who inherited my anxiety and my love for all things Disney. Consider me your new OT mom bestie. I know my stuff, but I also know what it's really like in the trenches of parenting a child with sensory processing disorder.
Okay, Mom, enough about me. Let's start the podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's podcast. I'm really excited to let you listen in on the amazing conversation I had with Andy Putt. We talked about all things autism and how to celebrate it and how we can better think and talk about autism in 2022. If you don't know Andy yet, you should. You should definitely follow her on Instagram or Facebook. She is the owner and founder of Mrs. Speechy P. I will put a link to her Instagram and her socials in the show notes. But Andy is a pediatric speech language pathologist who specializes in autism assessment. She is neurodivergent herself and passionate about autism advocacy. And she works in public schools and she creates a lot of really great neurodiverse affirming content. And you'll actually hear us talk about some of the great content that she has out there for you if you want to learn more about autism. Before I start the episode, I do have a couple of notes for you. The first is that you might notice that we use identity first language in this episode, which means that we say things like autistic person rather than person with autism. And this goes against what I learned in grad school and when I was working with the autistic population years ago. But what we know is that this is actually in line with what most of the autistic community has been voicing as they celebrate autism as part of their identity. And it's something to be proud of and something that really can't be taken away from them. So please know that if this language is new for you, please just have an open mind about that and know that this is what most of the autistic community has been voicing. Our goal is to destigmatize autism and celebrate autism for what it is, a wonderfully unique brain wiring. My second note is that you'll hear Andy talk a lot about subtle signs and less common traits of autism, especially in girls. And if you're not at that part of your journey yet, maybe your child doesn't have a diagnosis, maybe you've thought of it. And if you hear something in this episode and it resonates with you, please know that it's not automatically diagnosing your child as autistic. Nothing in any of my episodes, including this one, counts as a diagnostic tool. It's not a comprehensive checklist by any means. This is not medical advice. It's just something to spread awareness about and help people have a deeper understanding of autism. All right, let's get started. Hello, Andy. I'm so happy to have you with me today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you for taking time out of your weekend to talk about, I think, one of your favorite topics, one of your passion topics. I'm assuming too much by that, right?
No. Autism is something I can talk about over and over and over and all day long. So.
And it's so important. So anyone who's here right now, obviously you clicked on this podcast, you saw the title of it. We're talking about autism, but more specifically touch on how we should be thinking about autism in 2022. And then more importantly, how we can have these conversations around our kids. If your child is autistic, or you have siblings or friends or even family members who just need a little bit of help understanding everything that autism entails and really the beauty of it and how we can shift our mindset around how we think about autism. So Andy, I'll let you give a quick introduction to yourself. I don't think I could do it justice, but
I'm going to plug her Instagram here because she has some of the best quick bite-sized infographics that give a lot of really good information that is neurodiverse affirming and is just really easy to understand things. So Andy, please tell us a little bit more about who you are, where you're from, and how you found this as your niche topic.
Sure. So my name is Andy. I am a speech language pathologist and I live in Texas. I actually work in the public school system, and that is how I got interested in autism assessment. So I was on an autism evaluation team, and it was really, I mean, I had always loved autistic kids. Like I had gravitated towards them. They were kind of my favorite. And then when I started doing these evaluations, it really opened my eyes into what all autism was, made me realize I had totally missed kids because I didn't know what I was looking for, you know? And then once you start really doing that, and I had amazing mentors who I think would make or break anybody who was doing that. I just got really lucky. And then as I started Miss Speech UP, it was more on the speech side. And then I was realizing people just didn't know what autism was. And so when I would talk about that, it just got a lot of responses. And so it kind of evolved from helping parents to work with their kids for speech and language at home to understanding autism. And now it's kind of just like a mix of everything because I can't just pick one small thing.
There's so many things to talk about. And I love, that's one thing I do love about Instagram is that it allows us to first start with things that we think are our main passion topic. And then the conversation gets shifted based on what people comment and questions they ask. And I'm like, that is a great question. And then you could dive into an entire series of posts and uncover so much more and learn so much more along the way. There's definitely some cons to social media, but right now I'm choosing to embrace all of the pros because there's so many things that I wouldn't know today if it were not for Instagram. Like,
yeah, just same.
Plain. The Instagram has just really been a really good place of support, but a lot of information. And I think it gets a bad rap from people who are not on social media. So that's a whole different conversation, but I'm glad that you're here. And why don't we start out there? Because you mentioned how there's a lot of misunderstandings about autism. And I have experienced this both personally when I reflect on things I used to think about autistic individuals before I was an OT, but then even as an OT, when I would see a diagnosis on a client's form, or how I would think about them when I would learn that I would get a new client who was autistic, I had all of these preconceived notions about them. But I want to hear from you and anyone who's listening, whether it's new to you or you're wanting to learn a new way to talk about it. Andy, in 2022, how can you give us a brief summary or your best introduction to people who need to understand autism more? Like, how would you define it to someone who doesn't know anything about autism at all?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is, I mean, I feel like most people have heard of the word autism, right? And so they already have ideas about what it means. And so usually I tell people to just kind of forget everything that you think you know, because it's likely based in stereotypes. Could be true for some kids, maybe even half the kids, but it's not going to be true for all of the kids. So kind of letting go of some of that is, I think, huge for a lot of people. It was big for me. And it can really change how you view autism. So when I am looking at a child for diagnostic purposes to see if they, I do educational eligibilities, I'm looking at differences in three areas. So the first one would be language development. So some kids will, they are late talkers, right? So those are pretty stereotypical with the late talkers or non-speaking kids. But a lot of people don't realize that they could also have advanced language skills, really large vocabularies, and just how they develop language can be different. The next area is socialization. So again, people think this means antisocial, and it doesn't mean antisocial. For some people, it does mean they prefer to be alone. But for a lot of people, it means I want to be social. I want to be around people. I want to have friends, but I do it differently. And sometimes that can not be welcomed from other people because neurotypical people learn these really rigid social roles, and autistic people don't have that. So they didn't learn it just by observing other people. And it doesn't make sense to them if you explicitly say that to them. So it can look very different, but it's just differences in how we socialize, how we communicate in a social manner. And then the last area covers a whole lot. So it's like the repetitive behaviors or movements like flapping and finger posturing. It could be preferring routines. It could be lining up items. And then it can also be sensory differences. And I know people listening to your podcast, very familiar with that part. And I get that question a lot too. It's like, what's the difference between SPD and autism? And like SPD is just that one small part of autism. And autism is really a huge umbrella of patterns of differences and not just one thing.
That is a really great way to lay that out objectively for parents. And I like how the language that you use keeps coming back to just they socialize differently and they have differences in the way that their brains learn. And it's just the word different, I think, is... I think even the word difference, as we're using it to be more neurodiverse affirming, just the idea of being neurodivergent, meaning like a different pathway, a different, just not the same as you or I, that makes sense to me. But still some parents hear the word different and feel like, I don't want my child to be different. And that's when I can tell the conversation goes that way, when I hear from parents who are like, I'm concerned my child might be autistic, or I'm worried, are they autistic? And I think a lot of that just comes from the misunderstanding that our culture surrounds around that. And there's some, like that first step, like you're talking about, forget everything you know about autism, because that's that inner work I think that parents need to come to terms with before. Now, obviously, I've seen on your Instagram, and one of the other like little niche expertise parts that you have is that autism in girls looks different. And so the main question I have in regards to that is I get a lot of DMs from parents, and I've thought this as well, where people are like, I see my daughter might be autistic, might not be autistic. She's right on the border. I know girls present differently. We've had her tested. They said no. I still think she might be. What should I do? And I'll tell you what I end up suggesting, how I talk about it. I'm curious about what you think as well. My thought is, and this is my thought process for me with my daughter, is I'm not totally... sure yet what I haven't fully ruled out autism for my daughter. And I'll say that people ask that all the time. Every professional I quickly consult with says no right away. But I have in the back of my mind that I know autism looks different and presents different in girls. But I'm like, how much do I even really need to push for that label or for that particular diagnosis? Because I'm not looking for a particular service that needs that autism diagnosis. Even with the insurance I have, they said, even if she were to have a diagnosis of that, it doesn't automatically qualify her for OT. The only thing I really want for my daughter is OT services and some play therapy services, and an autism diagnosis doesn't guarantee that. So what does that label really truly mean to me or my daughter, even like in the future, right? Because I already educate her that her brain learns differently and that she's neurodivergent, and that's a beautiful thing. And our brains are different from each other. So she's already got that resilient language and confidence that I'm trying to build for her. But I'm curious what you say to parents who are like, I'm on the fence. Does this matter? Why would I need to know yes or no if my child checks these boxes to get some code that says they're autistic? What's your take on that?
Sure. So I get that question a lot as well. And I think a lot of people aren't as equipped as you are. So like, I think for your personal experience, I feel like that's going to kind of cover your bases, at least while she's young. Right. But for most people, my recommendation is to get those services while you can. I know you're trying really hard and it's not an easy thing to do. For me, getting my child an OT was super easy. Like it took me a week, you know? So it just kind of depends on how that is as far as services. You don't necessarily need a diagnosis when your child's 2, 3, 4, as long as they have support. However, as they get older, knowing how their brains work can really be game changing, especially for girls, because we know that undiagnosed autistic girls are at risk for a variety of things, a lot of mental health, you know, suicidal thoughts or even attempts, eating disorders, sexual abuse. There's so much that knowing why they're different, how their brain works, and really specific information about that can really change that those teenage years, that early 20s, where we see a lot of these undiagnosed women have mental breakdowns and really reach out and need support and then get diagnosed with bipolar or schizophrenia, even when it's really just autism and they're social.
Yeah, I think as you're saying that, it definitely validates the route that I'm taking and sort of how I explain to parents of whether or not you get this label for autism, if it's for validation, if it's for proving it to so-and-so's professionals or the teachers or whatever it is, for you and your child, the way I talk about it is just think about it like functionally, like talk about how your child, things that your child really enjoys, things that they really are good at, things that they need extra help with, and what are those things that help them so that in the future they know to ask for those things or they know why a certain subject or part in school is hard for them. As you were talking, I was kind of like fast forwarding and envisioning myself, you know, with my daughter going through all the stages of her life, maybe when she's going through puberty or in high school or in college and she's experiencing hard times. And I imagine myself having a conversation with her saying, you know, we never got you diagnosed as a child because I was supporting you enough. If this is something you would like to pursue for something that you would like, let's do that. Because I know oftentimes a lot of people are getting diagnosed later. But I am so on this journey of trying to be as transparent as I can with my daughter through everything. Mostly because my parents were not like that. Like they tried to shield me from everything and keep me in a bubble, which is at the end of the day, like their intent was to like show me love and keep me happy. But I am more of the intent of like, I don't want to keep secrets from my daughter. And I also don't want to add to the stigma of, well, why didn't you talk about it? Because you were scared of it or anything like that, right? So I think parents who are listening, if you're noticing something and you need to search for an assessment to have more of a focus of what service to look for or how to help your child to read the right books to get there, that makes sense. But if you feel like you are doing, like you feel good with the way that you're parenting at home and you have their supports down at school, you don't have to have that diagnosis. Just make sure that your child is included in the way that you are supporting them and think about things that they need help with. So on that topic, Andy, I want to ask you if you could give people an example of, because there's a lot of talk about being neurodiverse affirming when we're talking about autism, and also talking about like a strengths-based approach when we're talking about therapy or working with autistic individuals. Can you give us a rundown of what that might sound like?
Sure. So neurodiversity affirming, basically you're saying to a child as they are, I accept you. Your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences are valid. And there's not a right brain. Like there's not a right way to think and there's not a right way to be or to act. And so like your experiences are valid. And I think also recognizing that when autistic people speak to other autistic people, they are satisfied with their communication experiences because they have similar communication styles. When neurotypical people communicate with neurotypical people, they are satisfied with their experiences because they have similar communication styles. When autistic people speak to allistic or non-autistic people, even if they're neurodivergent, that's where there tends to be a problem because there's different communication styles. So what they're doing is not like wrong or the bad way. And what neurotypical people or allistic people are doing is not the wrong or bad way either. It's just different. And so we all need to learn and work on that communication together, not just one person. And then for the strengths-based, really just building off of a child's interests, building off of things that they are good at, rather than saying, oh, you can't do this, so let's do this. Let's make it important important to you. Let's pick what you like to do, and then I will incorporate some of these really important life skills that you do need to learn into that. And so that can look a really big variety of ways. So because I have kids who I work with who are in fourth or fifth grade, I have an autism self-advocacy group. And in order to be in my group, you have to know that you're autistic. And so it's really freeing for them because we're talking about it openly and we're accepting it. And we can talk about different things. Like when autistic or non-autistic people communicate, I might give you a super sneaky conversational lead is what we call them. And it might look like I'm just making a statement. So I went to the zoo. And secretly, I want you to ask about my trip to the zoo. And that's like all other autistic people know that that's what they mean secretly and not saying it or giving you any hints. Those
unwritten rules, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so I'm like, I can teach you how to recognize these if this is something that's important to you, but you don't have to do it if you don't want to, right? So like kind of giving them that power of this is how you can understand things, but you get to do what you want. And here's how you can advocate to tell people what you need. So if you want me to ask you a question about what you did, I need you to just tell me or to say, ask me about it. And I will, and we'll talk about it, you know? So it's really cool to be able to do that. I wish that we lived in a world where I could do the same thing to autistic kids, you know, and that would be such a great thing for including everybody. And maybe one day that can be a thing. I do it in my speech groups. If you're not autistic, we do talk about those two different things. But I don't have access to all of the gen ed kids. Right. So,
That needs to be like a school wide. Yeah. That needs to be like a school wide curriculum at some point. Like they have like social emotional learning, like once a week, like my daughter has, like they should do like a whole like month on learning about autistic brains in a neurodiverse affirming way that doesn't scare people off.
Or just like including it even into what they already have on that social emotional. Because I work in a school. I know teachers have 18 hours worth of stuff that they magically have to squeeze into a 7-hour day. You know, so it's not really fair to say this is all on teachers. I think parents really have an important role in that as well. That's why I released my How to Talk to Kids About Autism to kind of help you have those conversations. But it is hard to squeeze that in because it's not a priority to most non-disabled people, right? But we need to make it to be one.
We do. Yeah, and that's what I always saying for everything about and everything about talking about neurodiversity, I'm always saying like it always starts at home. Parents, like what I share and what we talk about on our Instagram is mostly towards like parents or therapists who work with neurodivergent autistic children, and we're giving them tips on how to support them. But like, I love when I get messages from parents of neurotypical kids and teachers who are like, I had no idea. Like, I'm going to change the way I'm thinking about it today. And it's such a bigger, like system-wide. I feel like everything we talk about and not complain, but bring to light about these concerns, always the healthcare system, the education system, like everything needs to start from the top down, but we're trying to work at it as best we can locally with our own schools, with our own teachers and our parents. So at home, can you give us an example? Let's start with autistic children. How you said the requirement for them to be in the group, obviously, is that they need to know that they're autistic. And I think that that's a really big piece that parents struggle with. One, should I tell my child? Two, when should I tell my child? And three, how should I tell my child? Can you give us a quick rundown of how you would advise a parent if they were coming to you to ask you that question, if they maybe just got that diagnosis?
For sure. So if your child is like under 5 and you just got that diagnosis, I would be sure that when you are having conversations about autism, not necessarily about your child, right? Because we all have feelings about our kids that we don't need to say in front of our kids. When your child is near, we can talk about autism to your partner in a positive way. You don't have to say it in any relation to your child, right? So just have that word a household word. So it's not a bad word. It's just a word that we hear in our house. And then I think if your child's 4, three, four, as long as they're, you know, if you think that they're able to comprehend, we can start having that conversation. If you're not sure that they're able to comprehend, you can still do short things. Like you can read books about autism and you can kind of incorporate some of that into your day and assume your child understands, right? So we want to assume that they have that competence and not that they don't, because the worst thing, they're not ready and they don't understand it, but nothing bad happened, right? And so I think having that conversation early on is a huge advantage to kids. And then as far as how to have it, if you've already had been using the word autism, and if you've been using the word, you know, talking about differences or disabilities, I think that that kind of is easier to kind of sit them down and say, there's something I'm going to tell you. If they can remember going to the doctor, you could talk about that. Or you can just say, you know, I want to tell you that your brain is different from other kids, or from some other kids, and that differences are a really good thing, right? Sometimes we hear differences, and like you said, parents are afraid, they don't want their child to be different. In my house, like the word weird is a compliment, because we are all weirdos. And if we weren't weird, we would be incredibly boring, right? Mm-hmm. Like that would be so bad. So if somebody says to me, I'm weird, I'm like, oh, thanks, you know? Yeah. And so I think if we're kind of modeling some of that too, that gives our kids power, because they are going to be called weird, right? Like it's just going to happen. Even neurotypical kids are going to be called weird, but we know that kids that are neurodivergent, they're going to get called weird. And they are weird. Like I'm weird. We're all weird. And it's not a bad thing. Right. So as long as we kind of give them that power and they can say, oh, thanks. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I am. I'm proud of it. You know, it kind of takes away that power of that name calling. But really just kind of having the conversation really openly. So autistic communication is incredibly blunt. So your kid will benefit from you being incredibly blunt. Like, yeah. I am ADHD. I naturally am quite blunt. And now that I am super familiar with autism, and I just know that I can interrupt and say really blunt things that I need kids to do, and they respond really well. I'm like, oh, this is such a great communication style. Yeah, and I've actually like adopted hidden nuance some of that. To it. Yes.
Yeah. It's
yes,
very
there
easy.
Is no
yeah.
misunderstanding.
Yeah.
you know, and they, what they view as rude is completely different from what autistic people view as rude. And so when I do those things, they're not saying it's rude, I'm helping them, you know? And so I think kind of keeping that in mind as well. The biggest challenge to that is the parents' feelings about autism and about how their child might react. But I would say 90% of the time, the kid's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's the end, and the parent like freaked out for months and months and months about how to have that conversation, and the kid's like, whatever.
Well, that's why I was thinking too. I almost think like step zero, or like a prerequisite to even talking to your child, is really make sure that you're in a good place. Like you have to process that as a parent too. And if this is something to you, like this is like, you know, like I've spoken to some clients who like I worked with them for years and they didn't get the autism diagnosis until like after working with them. And it was like a big thing for the parents. And every feeling that you have is valid, but I would make sure that you settle with that feeling and the processing of that before you have the conversations with your kid. Do you know for like the younger kids, or if, you know, if there's parents here who want to start doing this work now before a diagnosis, or don't have any neurodivergent kids in their house, and we want to start having these like casual conversations to not make autism a bad word or anything like that, what are your favorite like books for like young children, if you know of any off the top of your head, or shows? And the one show that I've only seen, I know Sesame Street sometimes has a character that's autistic, and then Daniel Tiger has an episode with an autistic classmate that joins the group. So you can like start that way if your child likes those shows, and then jump that off of that. But I'm curious if you have any off the top of your head that you like to recommend to families to start introducing it.
Yeah. So I actually just recently read that Thomas is adding an autistic character. Cool. And I'm really excited about that, because Thomas Trains. Is very common. Yeah. And specifically Thomas is a very common special interest. But the ones you mentioned were the other ones that I know, and I don't really know anything about the Thomas. Yeah. I just heard that was going to happen. Yeah. And then as far as books, for younger kids, I like All My Stripes. It's about a zebra and who's different. And then also I like My Brother Otto. And that one's good for AAC use too, because Otto is an AAC user. And then mine is for older kids though. So like 7 and up, because it's very text heavy. It's just how to talk to kids about autism, and that aims for holistic kids. So just to kind of get that conversation going, it would be good if you're not quite ready to talk to your child about their own diagnosis. It could be a good intro. And then I'm working on it's not quite a book. It's more like a PDF with like a comic for kids, how to tell your child they're autistic. And said, the first parts are walking parents. This is the steps that you need to do for That's yourself gonna be, yeah. before you have this conversation. And then just like a story that they can just read to their child, to take away some of that, the emotions that parents have and the stress that they feel about saying that to their child. Here it is in this story. So I'm really excited about that. I'm not sure when it's going to be ready. We've been working really hard on that. And then also the Autism Handbook for Kids. And that'll be for kids who already know they're diagnosed. And then it's going to go over everything, which Laura helped wrote some of the pieces.
It's
going to
be
sensory.
So good. It's so good.
I'm so excited.
I'm really excited for your comic strip thing. I didn't know that was going to be a separate resource. That's going to be very helpful. This talking like step by step parent, like walking parents through it. That's really great. That's a good list of stuff. So we're going to put a link to all of those books and Andy's resources in the show notes. I want to go back and ask you a question, because we were talking about how we don't want to place so much pressure on autistic individuals to have to match the communication styles of non-autistic individuals. But we're still wanting to help them understand, right? Understand how they communicate, why it might be hard and why it's different and all of that. Like one of the top concerns that I hear from parents when their kids are so young, autistic or not, even like just emotional regulation stuff, sensory stuff, a lot of them jump to the future and are like, well, how are they going to deal with like employers or like partners or like things when I'm not there to explain their qualities to their employer? Or like, you know, they're going to have to, like, I understand I would love all these non-autistic individuals to like just be nice to my kid, but like, are they going to get hired? Are they going to like make it in the workforce? Like, what do you say to those parents, or how do you
address that? Is a valid concern to have. And it is something that people are going to face really, I mean, throughout their lifetime. So I actually have an aunt who I told her she was autistic when she was like, I don't know, 50 something. And she's like, it just changed so many things for her. She's like, that makes sense. That's why when I move my body like this, I feel ashamed, because somebody told me to stop. And I never knew what that energy was. And I'm like, it's stimming, you know, or like somebody asked her if she had Parkinson's last week. And I was like, and she was like, I think it was just nervous. It's a tick. And I'm like, you're stimming, yeah. You know? And so just kind of having those words can be really good. And she actually disclosed, she said, she told me that she told her boss, I'm on the autism spectrum. That's what, you know, and I was like, you're regulating your body, you know? And so as I give her those words, it helps her to kind of self-advocate some of those things. And she's like, my boss just keeps telling me things and she's not telling me what she really wants. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you just need to tell her that you need her to explicitly tell you things, because other people understand what she's saying. You just don't understand that, because that's not how you communicate.
Yeah. So you really, this is why it really is important to not shield our kids from the things that they need support with and to understand how they work. But would you say that if you were like, applying for your first job or even like your career out of like grad school or college, would you like disclose that on like an interview or like on an application? Like, what would you suggest?
I think that's a really hard decision to make, and it would be really case by case, which makes it really difficult for me to like coach somebody on when to have those conversations. I know a lot of people don't like to do it right away. And you know, I think it's a personal decision for sure, because there are people who will think bad things about autism. I wish that wasn't true, but I think I would recommend being in a safe place, feeling safe to say that. For some autistic people, that's the second you meet somebody, because they are very oversharing and like to just say everything. You know, so for some people that can be what they do. And then for others, you know, wait until you feel safe. So not saying it quite right away. And then also I think this kind of leads into talking about masking. So, you know, we always hear masking is such a bad thing because when you do it all of the time, it's exhausting. It can lead to, dysregulation, meltdowns, everything like that. But I think something that's really powerful to tell kids is that you can choose to mask when you want to mask. And it's not like this only a bad thing, right? So like if you need to mask during a job interview, if you need to mask in order to be safe, if you need to mask when you're having conversations with a police officer or your boss, you know, that it's okay to do that when you feel you need to. But also recognizing that there should be safe spaces for you where you can unmask and you can be yourself, and that really you need to be looking for those unmasking safe places to be available to you as much as possible.
That kind of goes with self-advocacy
as well.
That's an interesting perspective I never heard of. I just always hear that first point that you talk about where adult autistic people are sharing how masking has impacted their mental health and just how drained they are. And that makes sense. And I didn't think about the other part where it can be like used, like intentionally used, like, okay, I'm going for this interview for 1 hour. I'm going to rest as much as I can right before, clear out the rest of my day, because probably masking after an interview and all of that seems really cognitively tasking. That's such an interesting point. I have two more questions for you. One of it is kind of a follow-up to what we talked about earlier, where we shared some books and language to talk to your child about a diagnosis or about being autistic. Is there anything you would change or anything you would add to that? Or is it the same if we were talking to their siblings to understand their siblings' neurodiversity? Anything specific that we would add, or would it kind of just say, you would say those things, but say that's your brother? Like,
I think a lot of times siblings need to understand everybody's needs, because a lot of times they feel like their autistic siblings are prioritized because they have more needs, right? So I think having those conversations of, we love you, you are important, we want to support you at the level that you need, and we also want to support your brother or your sister at the level that they need. And sometimes those things can change, right? So sometimes your brother might need a little bit more support. Sometimes you might need a little more support. And we are here to, you know, to love everybody and to support everybody, but kind of give them an idea of like what autism is and how their sibling might be experiencing the world and how that could be really difficult for them. You know, or like if a lot of times we see the meltdowns in autism. So just kind of understanding, having those conversations about why that's happening. And you can support your sibling, just like your sibling will sometimes try to support you when you need it. These are things that you can do. And I think having them involved in a lot of that can really, help with jealousy. But also just like that sibling relationship overall.
Yeah, that jealousy and feeling like the autistic sibling gets so much of the attention and support. I hear parents struggle with that a lot. So hopefully that's helpful for anyone listening.
I would pick time too, like to spend with your non-autistic child. That's really specific and intentional. And maybe let them pick what they want to do. You know, so you have 15 minutes before bedtime and it's just going to be me and you, and you get to pick. We can draw, we can read, we can, you know, do whatever, and, you know, put your phone away and 100% of your attention on that child.
Would you suggest having that conversation of like, you have autism and your brother has autism, like separately, or is autistic and your brother is autistic separately? you know what I'm saying? Like introducing the child to their personal diagnosis and then talking to the sibling about it, like at separate times.
I think that would be like an individual family decision, depending on how old everybody is and what they've already recognized. I think for some families that would be beneficial to do separately, but I think some families would do really well to have it together.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is case by case.
Right. I know it's so hard to give good examples.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Sorry. I know. I totally get that. Okay. So I want to end with, do you have like a top list of Instagram autistic voices who people here should listen to? I love sharing Nicole Paris. She is Sounds of the Forest. She was just on TikTok. Now she's on Instagram as well. And I have a podcast episode with her, episode 12, I believe, if anyone wants to go back and hear it. But I hear from so many parents when I share these videos, they feel like it's like a healing part of their process. And they're just like, oh, this just gives me so much hope and it makes me feel better. And as therapists and teachers, we need to continue hearing from the true autism experts, the people with lived experience of being autistic. So do you have your favorite creators that you want to share on here? And I'll add them to the show notes as well.
Sure. So my very favorite is the Autistic Cats, and they no longer post.
Oh no.
But they, I know, I was so sad, but, they have all of their old posts are still up. So they didn't close their account. So if you were like going to go binge through something, I would definitely recommend, of them. And then I love also Neurodivergent Lou. She is a teenager, believe it or not. And she just explains things so well, to kind of understand the autistic experience. And then I like Fidgets and Fries as well. She's autistic and she has kids that are on the autism spectrum as well. And at varying presentation levels. And so I think that's a really important perspective as well. Cause she's also Black and one of her kids is an AAC user. Mm-hmm. So like a whole lot of, information from her, to really challenge your own thoughts. Cause she's very big into advocacy, very honest also. And so I really like learning from her as well.
I also want to add in there, Nye Functioning Autism.
Ooh, yes.
I really like them too. Those are great accounts. So there's some that I hadn't heard of, those first two, that I'm going to definitely check out myself. So anyway, thank you for that. So before we sign off, can you give us another rundown of how everyone can continue learning from you, where they can connect from you, and another shout out to your amazing resources that are coming up in case everyone wants to hear it again?
So I am on Facebook and Instagram, Mrs. Speechy P. And the products that I already have out are the Autism Handbook. That would be for parents or for therapists who are looking to share information with parents. That kind of talks about autism from the new perspective of not bad or wrong, but we are validating experiences and we are sharing information in a positive way. That also kind of reflects parents' feelings because we all have feelings about our kids. We don't always love our feelings that we have about our kids. Our feelings are not all rational. So it kind of covers all of that by validating parents and giving them tips to support them. And then the other one that I have out is How to Talk to Kids About Autism. And that, again, aims for autistic or non-autistic kids. Ideally, it would be like a gen ed classroom would be the target audience for that. But it would be good for siblings or just kids that you have at home that you want to start opening the conversation. And then my upcoming products, which I'm super excited about and working on finalizing and illustrating, is the Autism Handbook for Kids. And what I found was people were using the Autism Handbook with their kids to kind of help explain autism and help them learn about autism. But like I mentioned earlier, it was kind of aimed towards parents and their emotions. And so this is going to be more aimed toward in kid-friendly language with comics and illustrations, less text to kind of go over a lot of the things that autism, what it means, what it could look like, what is stimming, how can I recognize my sensory needs, kind of have going over all of those things that would be needed prior to being able to really accurately, effectively self-advocate. And then as soon as that's done, I've already started on it. I got a big bulk, but I'm really pushing the kids handbook before I work on the how to tell my kid they're autistic. And that'll be, I'm so excited about this. So it's going to walk through all the things that parents need to do before they have the conversation, and then comics for kids at varying ages. So, you know, it's not just a one-time conversation. It's going to be a conversation over time. You're going to have it more than once. I think a lot of people make that mistake if we're just going to talk about it once and then we're never going to talk about it again, which adds to the stigma, right? Makes it seem like it's bad, but that's not what it is. So hoping to have all of that out definitely by the end of this year.
Yay. Oh, I am so excited for that. So I'm going to put as many links to live products that she has in the show notes, and then you can just stay tuned on her Instagram and her website for all of those things to fully launch. But thank you so much for giving us
or we can share
today.
I was going to say, we can share my website and then they can get on my email list and then they'll be notified whenever new products are out.
I am always encouraging people to get on email lists because you never know when Instagram is going to act up and like disappear one day. I keep saying that.
Right.
And so get on those email
lists. It's terrifying.
Get on those email lists. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having this conversation. I think this was very valuable and I learned a lot. And I hope everybody listening feels more equipped coming out of this, either with something new to try, either something new that you learned, or just the validation that you're doing everything that you already should be doing. So thank you, Andy, for being here, and I'll talk to you soon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider rating it and leaving a review, which helps other parents find me as well. Want to learn more from me? I share tons more over on Instagram @TheOTButterfly. See you next time.